This is episode number 43 with AI researcher Debelina Bhattacharjee. Welcome to the Super Data Science Podcast. My name is Kirill Eremenko, data science coach and lifestyle entrepreneur. And each week we bring you inspiring people and ideas to help you build your successful career in data science. Thanks for being here today. And now let's make the complex simple. Welcome, welcome, welcome to the Super Data Science Podcast. Hope you're having a great week. And today we've got a very interesting guest, Debelina Bhattacharjee. She is calling in from Seoul, which is South Korea. And she is an AI researcher working at one of the universities there or doing her degree at one of the universities there. And a very, very interesting conversation that we had. It's about AI, all about artificial intelligence, the different types of algorithms, different types of tools, different types of problems. So in this podcast, you will learn what an optimization problem is and the different approaches to the optimization problem. You'll also learn about the important tools for a data scientist to learn now to prepare for the future of the field of data science and artificial intelligence. You'll also learn about the important techniques which are going to be valued in the near future. And of course, Debelina will tell us about the research project that she's doing. Very interesting. It's about artificial intelligence, but it's different to neural networks. It's a different approach. It's not inspired by the human brain. It's inspired by something else. And what exactly you'll find out inside this podcast. And of course, we'll talk about many, many other things. We'll talk about Hadoop. We'll talk about Strata, Scala, Spark, all the different tools, all the different applications. And you will even see how Debelina's algorithm can be and is used in health to actually help people have better and healthier lives and even sometimes save people's lives. So there we go. That's what this podcast is all about. And can't wait for you to check out all the interesting and insightful and even cool concepts that we're going to be discussing. And without further ado, I bring to you Debelina Bhattacharjee. Welcome everybody to the Super Data Science Podcast. Today I've got a very interesting and exciting guest with us, Debelina Bhattacharjee. Debelina, how are you going and where are you calling from today?
Hello, Kirill. Thanks for inviting me to be a part of this podcast today. I'm doing great and I'm calling from Seoul right now.
So,
in South Korea.
Yeah, in South Korea. Wow, that is we've never had anybody from South Korea on this podcast. Like, what brings you to South Korea?
So what happened was I was working on this automated intelligent project for healthcare and during my bachelor's. So I just sent out the project proposal to a couple of universities for pursuing my higher education. So that time, one of the universities, so I got offers, but then there was this particular university which was exactly working on what I wanted to work on in future, and also the kind of opportunities that Seoul was giving me was really enticing. So I chose Seoul and ended up as an AI researcher over here.
Okay, that's very cool. And we'll get to that part in a second. So, but just out of curiosity, do you speak Korean? How do you get by in Seoul?
Yeah, you require Korean.
Yeah?
So, yeah, you do require. But then my Korean is really bad.
Yeah?
I'm just still getting my grip. Like, it has been a year since, like, I started learning Korean. So, yeah. Somewhere here, there.
You know, like, Kamsahamnida?
Oh, yeah, Kamsahamnida. That's like, thank you.
Kamsahamnida.
Yeah.
That's, and I also know how to count, I think. Il, I, sam, sa, o, yuk, chil, pal, kusil.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Wow.
That's pretty much all. How long did it take you to learn Korean?
So I told you I started like a year back. So, I know how to read and write, but then my vocabulary is like really bad. So I need to like pick up words whenever I come across people. And there's this blank look that they give me and I give them when we really can't get across what we want to say to each other. So, yeah, things happen. But then I pick up here from here and there, listen to people talking. manage, basically.
Okay, all right, that's really cool. That's awesome to hear, and big jump to learn a new language just to move to a country for your dream work. That's awesome. But tell us, give us a bit of background. Where did you start? You obviously didn't start in Korea. Where did you start, and how did your life take you here? What events happened in your life? What did you study in high school? And just walk us through how you ended up in Korea.
Okay, so what happened was when I was like 8, my granddad, he left me like a treasure of close to 40 books on mathematic puzzles and those things on pattern analysis that we used to solve as a kid. So that really like drew my interest towards the field of math and science. And those books were by the famous Indian mathematician Shakuntala Devi. I don't know whether you have heard of her or not, but those books were like really something, and it drew me towards that field. And I used to relentlessly solve patterns and used to look for patterns around and basically do anything that's related to numbers, which is all data. And lots of finding patterns out. So yeah, machine learning happened. And oh yeah, and also the second thing that happened was at around 2003, my dad gifted me a computer. So so I really and like I was taken aback by the amazing stuff and awesome cool stuff that I can build using the computer. So I started doing my pet projects at around 14, I guess. Yeah. After that, I used to take part in the National Olympiads. So one of the National Cyber Olympiad in my country.
Sorry,
I
this
topped
is
it
in India, right?
in India. Yeah. So I topped it.
You topped it. Congratulations. That's awesome. At
Thank
14.
you. Yeah, thank you so much. But yeah, it's been a great journey since then. And at 14, after that, I believed that maybe I can code and take this up as a career. So the bachelor's happened, and thereafter my master's, so in
Nice.
machine learning and AI. Yeah.
That's awesome. And so what languages did you start to code in when you were 14?
Okay, so the first language I started to code in was C,
Yeah,
which is
me
basically.
too. That was my favorite.
Yeah, exactly. After C, Java, and I used to like do C and Java. Then all of a sudden, with the advent of the standard template library in C++, I started coding with C++. Yeah.
Okay, beautiful. And so, but your bachelor's, did you also do that in C, C++, or did you move on to other languages?
During my bachelor's, it was like really diverse because depending on what I'm building, what class I'm taking, I used to switch between languages because, again, it was like a course requirement. So it ranged from everything, starting from like sometimes I was doing C, C++, C sharp, sometimes just using the platform of Visual Studio, exploring everything till F sharp. And and then I got into Python R, I think, in my junior year. So that's the third year in my bachelor's. So after that, all these database related languages too, SQL related languages, and Hadoop. I used to do all those.
Okay, all right. And so in your bachelor's, you said you studied machine learning, is that correct?
Okay, so the bachelor's, I didn't have like a specialty because you have to like in India you need to like study approximately 42 courses. You had to like do all of them, but at the end, I mean, in my senior year, you have these electives. So during that time, I went through like whatever can be the possible choices, which is related to data crunching and applying algorithms or models to solve that. So yeah, machine learning was the best thing which was coming close to it. And not only machine learning, I was always interested in building intelligent systems. So I wanted to do something really cool in artificial intelligence. So I took that up and thought of pursuing my master's.
Okay. And just before the podcast, you were telling me about how you, scored this opportunity in Seoul. And I think that can be very useful to some of our students who, or some of our listeners who are, still learning and maybe want to pursue a master's. Tell us a bit more. How did you go about finding this great opportunity for yourself in Seoul? Did it just like fall on you?
And no, what happened was I used to always look up. So I was always a part of the communities online of which is related to machine learning and data science. So there was this post. So I'm strictly speaking about communities like Data Science Central and some like opportunities on different kind of opportunities on academic fronts. All those postings. So I came across like every possible lab because for masters, what you need to do is you need to not only file an application to the university, but also send a separate application to your supervisor or under whom you will be working, and also in a different lab, with respect to your specialty. So because of that, I came across, I read, I think, screened across 200 to 30, 300, opportunities. And finally, one thing, I struck gold at, I think, at the 250th one. I don't really remember. It was very vague. Yeah. So that time I just saw, like, this lab, the thing is, we do, the work ranges from designing intelligent traffic systems to modeling smart cities, building intelligent healthcare solutions, everything which is related to wearable sensors, machine-to-machine communication, and Internet of Things, basically. So this was what I wanted to do because this is a very high-level, overview of the names that I just said. But internally, what we do is real-time big data analytics and along with that, building algorithms or even, tuning our models to build these systems up. So this was all I wanted to do. And this lab was a perfect fit. And there are so many opportunities in Seoul. And the best part is that this country has like amazing technological advancement. Coming from India, I really didn't know. I mean, I don't even think most of the people around the world know what this country has to offer. Like everything is really well organized. It's only language is a bit of a barrier, but everything else is super fine.
Yeah. Okay. Wow. That's really cool. And yeah. So, but why were you always so interested in artificial intelligence?
Okay, so as I said that I loved pattern analysis, and after that, what happened was when I was building my project, which I started off at around the time when I was doing my bachelor's, it was something like an automated healthcare solution. And I used to see this everywhere that the moment a person, okay, something like even say fever or any kind of, first-hand diagnosis that a person wants, which, and he's not having a doctor around or like doesn't have that, the luxury of visiting a doctor. So for such people, I wanted to create a really affordable or sometimes, I mean, if possible, free automated healthcare solution, which can be like your on-call doctor, and you can just, use that platform and type in whatever is your problem and get the first-hand diagnosis. Also, so there have been such projects by Microsoft and likes over there out in the world, but then I also wanted to form a recommendation engine for nearby doctors just in case for emergency. So I made that, and then I thought that, okay, now that I can do that, so why not AI and contribute further to this field? So that's how AI happened.
Okay, wow, that's really cool. So to tell us then about what are you doing now in your research? You mentioned that you're about to graduate very soon, right?
Yeah, just 2 months away.
Oh, wow, congratulations. It must have been a very
Thank
long
you.
journey.
Yeah.
All right, so what are you doing in your research?
Okay, so as I said that in my lab we work from modeling all these intelligent systems from and basically designing this smart city concept, which is right now happening around the world. And so what happens is my work specifically, if you ask, is to evaluate the different models and techniques in machine learning and apply them to solve these problems. These problems range from it can be sometimes just automating the traffic system, or it is the healthcare. But the thing is, we need to integrate this all together and make it an end-to-end system, like something that the vision is like a city of future and totally smart. So my work is, to make sense out of the data that we receive in real time, which is like huge. So, and also design solutions, sometimes mathematical models for solving these problems. So first, what I do is I evaluate whatever existing techniques are. And sometimes I come up with my own model. So recently I developed an entire algorithm from scratch. And its inspiration is quite interesting. If you might ask, I would tell a
Yeah,
bit
yeah.
more about it.
Tell us
Okay.
more about it. So you basically built a whole library, is that right?
Yeah, I built a whole library. First of all, the entire design, because it wasn't there. So I designed the model, because before building a library, I need to like make sense of it mathematically so that the computer can
Yeah.
understand.
Yeah,
Yeah,
and
so
this was what language was this library in?
this was basically in C, because the kernel is always of any language is always C, the lowest kernel that it's built on. So in order to understand properly, I always like start with C. So So the thing that happened was, whenever if you look around and you look at the way how trees branch themselves out, so it you would see that there is a pattern in how they branch themselves out,
Well,
and it's
yeah, I guess it depends on the type of tree, but yeah.
actually not even the type of tree. You can even look at a cactus,
Yeah.
any species of tree in that entire kingdom, plant kingdom, you can see there's a pattern of branching.
Okay.
If it's so that pattern, it's basically the Fibonacci series, which is 1 1 2 3 5 8 11, that
Okay.
series that adds up. So sorry, not 11, 13, I made a mistake. Anyway, so what happens is that the ratio of the two numbers, if you divide it, it becomes a golden ratio, which is prevalent everywhere, like even how our galaxy spirals out. So from there, I thought that, wait a minute, these trees do not have a brain, so to speak, do not look intelligent. So how do they know exactly in which direction, angle to grow in? In such, dynamic environments, something that they don't know. I mean, the environment can be really non-stationary. Like, okay, I'm using really technical terms. So,
Yeah. Basically, how do the trees know which way what the Fibonacci ratio is?
And somehow they just gain that overall stability. I mean, even if they're hanging just like, even if they're slanted above the ground, they still have the stability. So I decided to dig in about about their mechanism. I mean, what works, and then something blew my mind. I didn't know this, but they can communicate, see, and hear, and even have
Trees.
a memory of 40. Yeah, and even have a memory of 40 days. It's all there. I mean, the biologists who have researched it, and the best thing is that they can learn and have they have 13 different discovered senses. And we humans just have five. So
Wow.
the kind of sophistication that these people, these trees have is just mind-blowing. So I just decided to model their intelligence and design an algorithm based on this. So this is strictly nature-based, like any other nature-based algorithms of soft computing. So I built this algorithm and I made it to solve optimization problems. And in the applications that we work in our lab.
Okay. So how well is it doing? Is it beating other algorithms?
Yes, perfectly. I mean, with respect to accuracy, it's definitely beating other algorithms, but not so much with respect to time. We already have better algorithms because the speed of any such nature-inspired algorithms is hindered a bit because of the it has enormous number of parameters on which such algorithms are based. So the parameter tuning is required, and that takes a bit of time.
Okay. All right. So I just, for everybody out there, I just wanted to say, like, in terms of Fibonacci numbers, you might have already heard about them. But if you haven't, what Dubliner is describing is very interesting. They are all over the world indeed. And the golden ratio, like if you divide those numbers, so it's basically one, and then you just keep adding. So 1 plus 1 is 2, 2 plus 1 is 3, 3 plus 2 is 5, 5 plus 3 is 8, 8 plus 5 is 13, and so on. And if you divide one number by the other and you take the limit of that, it'll be 1.1618 something, something, something. And so basically that number 1.1618 is called the golden ratio. And like you can see it all over the world. Basically, right now, if you take a ruler, right, if you pause this podcast and you take a ruler and you measure the distance between the tip of your middle finger to your wrist, so your hand, and then you measure the distance between your wrist and your elbow, I think it is, you will find that the ratio between them is exactly 1.1618. How crazy is that? Like even us humans, we are designed by that ratio. And you know, the fact that trees grow based on that ratio is no coincidence. It's just anything that is natural, you know, like starfish grow in 1.618, galaxies spiral in 1.618. Like there's lots of debate about, you know, which galaxies spiral like that, which don't. But nevertheless, you can see it all over the world, and it's a real mystery. But like I wouldn't be surprised if when Dublin I'm not surprised when Dublin says that an algorithm that is based on the golden ratio can outperform others just because it takes into account something that is so fundamental and you know all around us. And yeah, so that's pretty interesting. But like when you develop this algorithm and you're saying that you've come up with some applications. Can you talk us a bit more through the applications or possible applications of this library that you've written?
Okay, so what I have done is it's basically an optimization algorithm, so you can solve optimization problems using this algorithm. Because whenever like I have presented my papers based on this algorithm, there had been a lot of curious eyes around and equally like questionable minds. So yeah, they some of them couldn't like really get a grip on it. So I totally understand that because they just said it might be philosophical. So after the results that I presented and there were successful demonstrations, so I just selected an application like medical imaging, and I processed numerous CT scan images to find the location and area of growth of tumors. That was one application that I did, and the results were phenomenal because I just like got it presented at one of the top AI conferences in the United States this year. So and after that, so yeah, it was well received, and I've also applied it to other applications where because we do a lot of sensor and data processing, so to find the optimal features from that sensor data, I have used this algorithm of mine.
Okay. All right. That's very interesting. And I want to slowly start getting into kind of like the more applied area of artificial intelligence and data science. And to start off with, can you please describe for our listeners what is an optimization problem?
Okay, so an optimization problem is like you need to. So there are two types of optimization. One is local optimization and global optimization. So it's like when you are, okay, so when you're looking for something and you know what will be the result. So the final result becomes your global optimal solution. But when you like move towards that trajectory of like that trajectory to get that final result, you get across some local best results like
Local
Suppose like
maximums and extremums,
local
yeah?
maximums, exactly. I'm trying to just break it down in a very non-technical manner, which is
Yeah,
a bit
and
difficult for me.
thank you for that. Yeah, so you have a global maximum which you're trying to find, but you have local maximums that are, possibly going to look like the global maximum, and you might
Exactly.
think that that is the best option.
Yeah. So that what basically any optimization algorithm does and finds those solutions. So there are different kinds. Again, single optimization where you just have one objective, like okay, I need to go to the grocery and get some stuff. So and I need to get this product. So that's like one objective. So multi-objective optimization again becomes like how many objectives you are addressing. So it's like I will go to the grocery store and get that product, but then it has to be of the minimum possible price. So I have two kinds of things to look onto. So that becomes multi-objective. So these algorithms have sometimes conflicting objectives, like something increases, something decreases. Sometimes both are increasing, so you have a maximization problem. So many different objectives are there, and based on that, the algorithms are built.
Okay, all right. That makes sense. And then the more objectives you have, like say, for instance, yeah, when you have one objective, get to the store, right? And then you have lots of different ways to get there. You have lots of different paths that you can take. That's an optimization problem. And
Exactly, yeah.
but then when you have multiple objectives, for instance, get to the store, get to a store and buy the cheapest butter. You
Yeah.
have so many more, like, right? You have so many different types of butter to choose from, so many different paths to take, and then you can also go, like, be, and you also can go to different stores, and therefore, what? Oh, that's even three optimization problems. But basically, is it correct that you have to multiply
Yes.
all of the options? It's not just a simple addition; it's a multiplication of all of the options.
It's a multiplication of the options, and then you have to form a single function of all those options together.
Yeah, and hence
And
the sorry, and hence something called the curse of dimensionality, right? That's when, when like if it takes you 0.01 seconds to solve one optimization problem, then when you have 1,000 of them, it doesn't mean it's going to take you, like 10 seconds to solve that those problems. You have to multiply
No.
them, so
Yeah.
it's going to take you like 1 million years to solve them together, and
Exactly, yeah.
that's why it's such a big deal in artificial intelligence, that you cannot just brute force through these problems. Even given the computational power that we have now, you just cannot simply brute force through optimization problems. You have to come up with smart ways of solving them.
Yeah, because brute force for such a kind of a problem will definitely take 2 million years for sure if you have so many parameters to take care of.
Yeah, exactly. And the funny thing is that our whole lives, all of our lives, whatever we're doing in life, is an optimization problem, right? You have to, you have to get to school. You have What time do you wake up in the morning? How do you pick up your kids, or and then you go to work, or you go to work and then you pick up, like, what exactly, in what order, and how do you do certain things? What routes and paths you take? That's all an optimization problem. And funnily enough, if we want to build artificial intelligence that can like rival us in terms of intellect, it has to be able to solve optimization problems as good as we do. And we somehow, as humans, somehow we can solve these optimization problems. Like, natural selection has given us this ability and this amazing tool called the brain, which allows us to solve these optimization problems. And that's kind of like, I think that's why we're trying to build these neural networks, these deep learning techniques, because they kind of mimic the human brain in the hopes that then robots will be able to do the same. And so, like, is your algorithm based on neural nets, or are you taking a different approach?
Okay, so my algorithm is not based on neural nets because clearly trees do not have a brain and a central nervous system.
Makes sense.
So but then I have totally worked on something that you just mentioned, natural selection. So so guided by natural selection, and there's a continuous reinforcement loop of penalty and reward, and the system builds on that. So, because you know how natural selection works, like, okay, I do something, it's a good thing for me, I will continue doing that. If it's a bad thing, I won't do that. So that's the thing. So my algorithm, the library that is it's built, it's just that. And there's a loop, underlying reinforcement algorithm, which guides this for natural selection. So that's how it functions. But not. But I do understand how neural nets and all possible deep learning techniques they work on, because again, they're inspired from the human brain. The inspirations are different, but the basic natural selection theory is same for both of them.
Okay, very, very interesting. And have you ever compared your algorithm performing a or like solving an optimization problem against a neural network solving the same optimization problem?
Yes, definitely. I mean, I have to do that for because I get questioned at conferences. So that time, so I have compared it to existing other, you know, algorithms. I would name a few, if you may.
Yeah, sure.
Okay, so there are the particle swarm optimization, the ant bee colony optimization, sorry, the artificial bee colony optimization, and the ant colony optimization, some of the like really great optimization algorithms which are out there from soft computing field. And in the deep learning field, I have compared it to, because obviously there are training and testing involved. That's a different way, approach for the deep learning thing. So I again need to like subdivide and again show why I'm applying it to deep learning. So that time I compared it with recurrent neural networks. And I think the last time I compared one of my in one of my applications, it was with restricted Boltzmann machines. So yeah, I did. And one of the things that I saw was, and it was quite controversial in one of my presentations, that how it was like recurrent neural networks couldn't, and it was also having a fuzzy logic base with that neural network scheme. So it couldn't find, okay, with increasing number of generations of run, I mean, that's the word, I mean, when it was running for more than 400 generations, in image processing I'm talking about, it did not cover the exact regions of interest on that image. Rather, it got the contour that we wanted to select on an image, it got scattered all over. So and this was deep learning doing it. So somehow there was some problem. But then when I did it with my algorithm, because it was having a continuous feedback loop, I mean, I know deep learning has that, but then this was more based on experiences. So this library took a lot of more time, but yeah, it gave better results. I mean, exactly the regions of interest on the image. So that's how I compared.
So, and you're saying that your contour was contiguous?
Yeah.
Okay. Very, very interesting. But I thought the deep learning area for image recognition is a convolutional neural nets.
Yeah, it is. But then what I did was used this particular fuzzy neural net system. So yeah, exactly. So it was fuzzy convolution neural nets. Did I say okay? So
yeah, fuzzy convolution neural nets.
Yeah, exactly. So that was the one which I compared it with. So maybe because I was working last night with Aaron and I got confused. So anyway, so that was how I did it. So the contour of interests were scattered for FCCN and not for the algorithm, which we developed. So
yeah, okay, cool. So your algorithms is pretty up at the top there. Interesting. We might be studying that very soon, as long if you write a Python library, maybe.
Yeah, sure, maybe. Okay. I will do that.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right, cool. So yeah, and once you finish your degree in 2 months, where do you think that'll take you?
So right now I really don't know, because I'm totally focusing on this graduation stuff. I'm writing my theses. And after that, I'm headed to Intel for 2 months as in their R&D section for some work on Internet of Everything. So that's IOX, a new thing. So and after that, I would be just open to opportunities. I don't really know what I'm like. But yeah, definitely, I would love to learn and just keep doing what I'm doing.
Okay. Do you have some kind of like dream that some problem that you want to solve in the world using artificial intelligence?
As I told you, for me, healthcare is one of the things that I really want to get there out. I mean, automate it totally. I mean, at least I'm not saying like perform surgeries and stuff, but then for the first-hand diagnosis or even, helping the doctors, making their work easy. So that would be great. And so that the time for diagnosis is saved considerably. And the accuracy of your prognosis when you're doing it, that will be much better. So I want to do that as of now. I haven't really thought long term what I'm going to do, but it's going to be everything related to AI. Another problem is that right now, the field of AI, it has a lot of capabilities like NLP, text and speech, knowledge recovery, image processing. I mean, it has also, I mean, like separately over there. But then none of the work that we have done, I mean, with respect to like all the works around the world happening right now, we need to integrate it and make it as one single system. But then it hasn't been done as of even 2017. The day that we build an end-to-end AI system, that would be great with all these functionalities. So that would be the ultimate aim of any AI researcher. So yeah.
Okay, all right. No, that's a big undertaking, definitely. All right, so but let's talk a bit about where the field of AI and data science is going in general. Like, well, from what you've seen around the world and from the research you've done, what do you think the future is of artificial intelligence?
As far as I know, and also with res I mean from the opinions of the scientists and researchers with whom I met in the conferences around the world, what all of us we think is the field of data science is headed towards a fusion with intelligent systems to create smarter cities of the future. That's the main vision. So I also strongly believe that with the ongoing research with real-time big data and Internet of Everything right now, data science is going to explode in the future with a lot of stuff happening. The thing is that as of today, I mean, morning when I got up, I just read this. Strata and Scala, they have been replaced by Hadoop already. And sorry, I mean, Strata and Scala have replaced Hadoop. And there have been,
Just
sorry,
a
the
bit of
other
a
way around.
different direction.
So, and there are, these data ops tools which are being developed to help data engineers, like DevOps tools, which used to be previously for all the developers. Now they are data ops. And they have been built by companies like Nixla and Data Kitchen, and it's really like great, like how data field is progressing, and also the automated predictive analytics, which is like the thing which is happening right now. So this predictive analytics had been automated last year, and the data robot was created, and people were like, okay, so by 2025, everyone is going to be out of jobs. So, but then it was a bit too soon to say because the data robot, as of now, it's just speeds up the model development for any model that you're building, and it is like the one-stop solution to speed up your whatever you're implementing in the industry. So, it has a long way to go. Definitely, it's a budding field. So both AI and data science together, it's going to be really powerful in the future.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. And I don't think data scientists will be out of a job. I think that's going to be the last
Okay,
industry to go.
I really don't feel so because as of yesterday, I mean, there were more than 4 million jobs out there for data scientists.
Wow.
So
Guys,
yeah, with
everybody
it,
listening,
for
do you hear
anyone.
that? Four
Yeah, for
million.
anyone with skills like Python, R, SQL, Hadoop, yeah, good to go. You are looking straight towards 25 years down the line. Good jobs,
Yeah,
stable
ex
career.
stable and explosive career.
Yeah.
So what would you say are the most important tools for data scientists?
As I said, I mean definitely Python, R, SQL, Spark right now. because obviously it has taken over Hadoop. Yeah, basically the entire scikit-learn NumPy TensorFlow, if you can do that, of Python, that would be great. So these are some tools, and even I use that on a like quite regular basis. And among the techniques, if you might ask, there are clustering, regression, neural nets, and decision trees. Most importantly, two things, which is support vector machines and ensemble learning that you need to learn if you like really want to get into data science, because all the companies out there, they work with ensemble learning. Everything is an ensemble. So yeah.
Okay, that's important. And why would you say SVMs are an important tool?
Yeah, so SVMs are really powerful, and they work very differently than the existing, you know, clustering or regression techniques. So yeah, and the way how they work, it's really beautiful, and the accuracy of results that they get because of that mechanism, and from that accuracy, it has been applied to a lot of products designing the modeling in most of the corporate sectors that I've come across. So that's why SVM is important too in your career.
All right, give us a 5-sentence breakdown. How do SVMs work? What is their main advantage?
Okay, so a set of data is there, and you need to like classify it into, say, two classes. So, for example, Kirill, if you could give me like two classes.
Or apples and oranges.
Okay, so apples and oranges. Great. So your machine needs to know.
I like to participate in your examples. I can see how you're a great researcher.
Okay. All right. Okay. So so you have a bunch of apples, oranges combinations, and your machine should classify which one is apple, which one is orange. So that's your objective. Great. So thereafter, the next step is, how will the machine know that? So the model of SVM, what it does is it builds something called a hyperplane. So to be non-technical, I would say like margins between the two classes. And those margins, what happens is any other algorithm would find a similarity, like which is an orange for class orange and which is an apple for class apple. But what SVM does, it selects which is in the from among the apples, it will select which is most which has the most similarity with an orange, just the opposite. And with the orange, it would select which has the most striking resemblance with an apple. So it finds out, like you can say, the outliers or the mistakes in a very non-technical manner, and puts that as your margins. And based on that, the remaining data is classified.
Yeah.
So that's how SVM works.
Yeah, it's very counterintuitive for all the other algorithms. Like if you're thinking of it about it in terms of the other algorithms, where they look for the most apply apple and the most orangey orange, and then they build their classes based on that. Whereas here you're looking for the really cool orange, which actually looks like an apple, and really rebel apple, which looks like an orange. And based on that, you're like, oh, so those are my boundaries. And then you're like, bam, hyperplane in between them. That's it. And that completely different approach to classifying.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So that's cool. Another interesting thing you mentioned. So just to summarize, guys listening, for tools of the future are Python, R, SQL, Spark, Scikit-learn, and TensorFlow. And techniques of the future are clustering, regression analysis, neural networks, support vector machines, and ensemble learning, among others. And another couple of interesting things you mentioned, and these are just from before on this show, Strata and Scala are replacing Hadoop, and Spark has taken over Hadoop. Can you go into a bit more detail on that? Like, Hadoop is such a trendy buzzword. Everybody wants to learn Hadoop. Does that mean that listeners on this show shouldn't be learning Hadoop? They should be learning Strata, Scala, and Spark instead?
No, I wouldn't say that. But right now, okay. So again, it depends on what the listeners want to do and what are they applying their okay, what they are looking for to with their model to solve. But then why I'm saying that Strata, Scala, and Spark are have replaced Hadoop is because for the right now, what the researchers are doing, and in all these conferences that I traveled and I saw, was that Hadoop has been there like since for quite some time, and right around from 2007 to today, it has almost been replaced by these technologies, and the companies are also looking towards these technologies because obviously for the real-time analysis of these technologies. So right now, I don't think that the listeners should just stop learning Hadoop because even I use Hadoop on a regular basis. But then I find Spark much easier, and I find it has more power to it rather than Hadoop, strictly because of the real-time processing that it can do with big data. I don't know so much about how companies or even, academic organizations are using Strata and Scala because I don't have a full knowledge on that, but I can speak for Spark for sure.
Okay. All right. So that's very interesting. And what would you say to somebody out there who it runs a business who's using Hadoop right now? Do you think they should start considering switching to Spark, or they're fine for the next couple of years?
That depends on what business that person is running, but definitely you should be like starting to make a transition to Spark. I strongly feel so, and it's again not a personal opinion. It's like speaking the minds of everyone who I've like come across,
Well,
yeah, in the past year.
let's say they're running an online store, and so they have a lot of OLTP OLAP type of things. What's the main advantage of Spark over Hadoop?
Okay, so if they are running an online store, basically it's more neater. I mean, it's neater, it's nicer, and the way how it works in the with respect to handling and processing the data, and also the kind of intuition it has towards modeling the data into different, okay, so if you're looking towards classification and stuff like that, or put it on clusters, Spark is better. So those are certain advantages. I don't know so much about the speed and stuff because right now I am like, in a jiffy, like what should I be using, Hadoop or Spark? Right now I'm trying my hands on both. So the moment I get to a proper thing, I will put that up on my LinkedIn profile.
Okay, all right, sounds good. We'll be looking forward to that. And all right, so I've got a few like quick questions for you, type rapid fire type of questions. Are you ready?
Okay.
All right, so what's the biggest challenge you've ever had as a data scientist or machine learning expert or AI researcher?
That would be handling unstructured data from all possible sources and giving them a proper structure. Yeah,
Okay.
very important.
All right, that's very deep challenge. I can totally appreciate that. What's a re recent win that you can share with us that you've had in a role, something that you're proud of?
It would be the completion of my recent project, the intelligent healthcare system of those CT scan detection that I presented in that conference of artificial intelligence in the United States.
Do you think that can have a real world application, and can soon we'll be using those?
Yeah, because the project got acquired by a hospital. So
Oh,
yeah,
nice, very cool.
it's giving results.
Congratulations, that's awesome.
Okay.
Yeah, well,
Thank you.
yeah, it reminds me of the podcast with Damian Mingle. I think it was number 13, where he came up with a machine learning algorithm to predict sepsis. So like, it's always very, just very cool to see people using artificial intelligence for good. To
Yeah,
rather
I
than,
remember that. Yes, I heard that. Yeah.
that's awesome. Okay, thank you. So now we
It
have
was great.
two people who are saving lives. That's awesome. Okay, and what? Oh, I had an idea about that. Oh, so you never mentioned what's the name of your library that you've developed? So if we can look it up or something later on.
It's not still because I told you it's not on Python yet.
Yeah, but even on C, did you give it a name, like a code name, Cobra or something like that?
No, because right now I haven't put up the name. I mean, it's just there. It's still in the beta version.
Okay.
So once I, yeah, so once I do that, I will keep you posted.
All right, sounds good. Next one is, what's your one most favorite thing about being in the field of data, or being a data scientist, being an AI researcher?
I really like the power that we have to build awesome and cool stuff with data, making machines to think more like us. So, and it's just the beginning. So we can create a huge impact on creating a smarter tomorrow. So you take, for example, Alexa and Google Home. It's just the beginning, you know. Yeah, so I really like that about our fields and also how in demand it is among, you know, the various sectors around the world.
Yeah, totally. And but on that, this is kind of like my question that I really wanted to get your opinion on after we, warmed up with everything else. What do you think about everybody saying, oh, a lot of people saying that AI is a threat? You know, that not only are we going to develop smart homes or smart cities and help people in healthcare, but actually we're going to create super intelligence or artificial general intelligence, which will have a prerogative of its own, which will eventually decide that humans are not meant to be on this planet. What are your thoughts about that?
I totally understand that because even we keep thinking that, and that's one of the issues that are discussed whenever there are meetups and business things. So I second that. I feel, however, it can be solved by, you know, going through. Okay, so we need a stricter security, and you know how it's coming because just of 2017, every person's personality even can be assessed from his online data. So imagine from all the data of sensors, services, and commodities that a single person uses, how easy will it be to know everything about a person? And I'm not talking about an end-to-end integrated AI bot, you know, that's like too much into the future I'm looking through. I'm just talking about the simple intelligent machines. So that is equally powerful while dangerous. So what we need is a data architect or scientist with a solid information security background. He will be really indispensable. So just if we can build a security mechanism around it, it's good to go. Yeah.
Okay, all right. That's important. It's good that you have the confidence that we'll be safe. Okay.
Yes. You need to believe, you need to stay positive. So yeah, whatever you do, you need to like just enjoy and think that it's going to work. That's how
Yeah.
I work.
Yeah,
Yeah.
that's true. That's true. Okay, that's it's been a real pleasure having you on the show. Thank you so much for coming on.
Oh, thank you so much, Gabriel.
Yeah, and so how can our listeners follow you, or maybe connect with you, maybe even ask you some questions if they'd like to learn more about your career?
Okay, so I'm on LinkedIn and I go by my name, Devleena Bhattacharjee. And you can also connect with me via Gmail on I go by Devleena for Data, that is Debleena Fordata at gmail.com. So I would be definitely open to sharing ideas, discussions, basically learn. Yeah.
Beautiful, thank you. And one last question I have for you today is, what is a book that you can recommend to our listeners to become better in the space of data science or artificial intelligence?
Okay, so this book would be the one with which I started off, An Introduction to Statistical Learning by James Whitten Hasty, I think. Yeah. In my opinion, it was a great read, and the book is free, and it's just so good. Also, if you might allow me, I would
Yeah.
just recommend another book,
Sure.
which is Applied Predictive Modeling, which has thorough examples and explanations. So these two books, yeah.
Okay, beautiful. So, an intro to statistical learning and applied predictive modeling. And actually, I want to also mention or reiterate that author that impacted you at the very, very beginning of your journey. If anybody's interested to see where how Dublina started out, her name was Shakuntala Devi, right?
Yeah.
Can you pronounce that for us? How do you pronounce it correctly?
Shakuntala.
Shakuntala Devi. Do you think they're available in
Devi.
English, like those pattern recognition books
Yeah,
that you were talking
yeah,
about?
yeah. All
Yeah.
of them are in English. Yeah.
Okay. So yeah, I'm really curious to check that out. It's always interesting to go back to the source where everything started out.
Yeah, sure.
Well, once again, thank you so much for coming on the show and sharing all this wealth of knowledge with all of our listeners.
Thank you so much for inviting me, Kirill. It has been a pleasure.
So there you have it. I hope you enjoyed today's presentation. It was quite a overwhelming discussion, actually. There's lots of interesting things. You can tell that Debelina is very well versed and very knowledgeable about all of these subjects, and has a lot of experience in all these different tools and techniques. And it was just a great pleasure that she was able to share these things with us. And perhaps for me, the biggest takeaway from today's episode was what Debelina said about her algorithm and how it's structured. Like, I always thought that neural networks are the most powerful thing and they're kind of the end game for humanity in terms of artificial intelligence. But in reality, it actually turns out that it's not. It's very interesting that such a forward-looking researcher like Debelina has chosen a different approach, an approach inspired rather than by human consciousness and the human mind. Debelina chose an approach inspired by the kingdom of plants and the natural selection that has been happening there. And based on some of the tests that she's done, her algorithm is performing at least as good as the existing ones out there. So basically, it shows that there are lots of avenues for artificial intelligence, not just the neural networks, and also kind of underlines how broad this field is and how many opportunities there are and how interesting it can be. So pretty much as long as you have the passion and have the drive and to learn the programming skills that you need, the world's your oyster. You can come up with any type of inspiration and code that and see how that goes. So there we go. That was our podcast on artificial intelligence. I hope you got some very valuable takeaways. If anything, now you know which tools to focus on and which techniques to study to prepare for the world of the future. You can find all of the resources mentioned on this podcast, including ways to connect with Debelina, at www.superdatascience.com/43. Also there you can get the transcript for this episode. And definitely make sure to connect with Debelina on LinkedIn and follow her career. And by the way, I just had a look at Shakuntala Devi, and she's considered the human computer. This is a person who can derive, like multiply 13 digits by each other within like several seconds. So that we're gonna include that in the show notes as well. I think that could be a very interesting thing to have a look at as well. And on that note, thank you so much for being here. I really appreciate you, and I can't wait to see you next time. Until then, happy analyzing.